Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna, en podcast från Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. I den här podden samtalar vi med specialister från olika områden inom hästmedicinen. Med det gemensamt att de delar vår och din passion för hästarna. Välkommen till Hästveterinärerna, podden för dig som är veterinär eller djursjukskötare och arbetar med hästar. Jag heter Maria Willemsson. I det tredje och sista avsnittet med Fredrik Nilsson pratar han och Gorm mer om rehabilitering vid gaffelbandsskador.
Hello and welcome to this third podcast about rehabilitation of tendon and ligament injuries. My name is still Gorm Karlsson, and fortunately I've still got Fredrik Nilsson from Højgaard Equine Clinic with me today. Fredrik, in our previous podcast we talked about injuries in the superficial digital flexor tendon. In this podcast we'll focus a bit more on injuries in the suspensory ligament, and is this an injury that you see more or less frequently than compared to the SDFT we've just talked about?
No doubt that I see much more suspensory ligament issues and injuries than I see SDFT injuries. No doubt about that, and they can then be both the proximal injuries, both front and hind legs, and the branch injuries, both front and hind legs. I don't see many, as I don't see a lot of trotters, I don't see many injuries in the corpus of the body of the suspensory ligament, which is more, at least in theory and in literature, more seen in trotters. But I see very frequent injuries of the suspensory ligament, both proximal and distal.
Yeah. If we just look at mid-body suspensory ligament damages compared to the same area for the SDFT, do we see any differences in the healing process?
Then difficult for me actually to say, because I don't see many of the mid-body injuries of the suspensory ligament. Without ruining the fun, actually, I would not be able, I think, to answer that question, since I don't see them very much. The mid body suspensory ligament.
Okay, let's just. I know it's hard to generalize, but if we take the scenario with a case where you've got a core lesion of the suspensory ligament of, let's say, a hind limb of a 9-year-old dressage horse. How would you proceed with rehabilitation after your initial treatment, and perhaps how would this differ from what we've just talked about SDFT wise?
First of all, I'll jump just to the point about suspensory ligament, the difference between front and hind legs, and here in this case you've described it as a hind leg. And that's also just what's seen in the literature. For sure, we have a worse prognosis when it's a hind leg proximal injury than if it's a front leg proximal injury. And that's also my experience, that in general, in the front legs, we can treat, manage, and keep fit better. Whereas the case you've described here, a 9-year-old dressage horse with a high suspensory injury in the hind, they can be quite tricky to handle. You didn't say the level here of the horse. Actually, for me also, that can be quite important as well, because it is easier in general to, for the long run, for a dressage horse to get it back to the sport and keep it there if it's already at the intended level that it needs to go at. That's often the problem if you have these kind of injuries in a 4 or 5 year old dressage horse, is you have it already, and it needs to, in order to go from a young dressage horse to a Grand Prix dressage horse, you need to do a certain number of kilometers and a certain number of exercises to learn it. For sure, some horses are more easy learners So yeah. they can do less. But that just means that if you already at 5-6 years old have big injuries in the suspensory ligament, it can be more tricky to reach Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Whereas if they don't get that injury until they are 9 and maybe doing a small tour or Grand Prix already, then it's once you get the injury healed and get them back to the sport, they don't need to do that many learning kilometers.
No.
So they have already learned what they need to do. Of course, you need to do small adjustments, but that means that when you go into the long-term success of the horse, and you will have a look at, which is very important. We didn't talk much about that in a previous podcast, but at when you are at the end of rehab, your contact and your talks with the owner doesn't stop.
No.
Because you need a lot of talk about how is this horse to be trained in the future.
Yeah.
And there it's much often, at least, much easier to make a plan for a horse already at Grand Prix level, where you can have a talk about it only needs to do gymnastics and then only a few days a week real dressage exercises where it's really collected and doing the difficulty and also the more demanding exercises, which is also more demanding for the bone and the soft tissues.
Yeah.
Whereas a young horse, if you only do real dressage exercises 2 days a week, it will take a long time to get it to Grand Prix.
Yeah.
So age in that way and level has a saying in the way that it can be easy with a horse that's already at the intended level that it needs to be at.
Yeah,
that was one perspective, and secondly, here the 9-year-old dressage horse, let's say it's a proximal suspensory ligament desmitis. So first initial treatments, then first it would be the same as with the SDFT. You would have therapeutic options chosen and done. You will have, for the rehab part, walk exercise, with or without corrective shoeing, depending on also the leg conformation and the ground that the horse will be exercised on. That said, because, as I said in the previous podcast, most corrective shoeing will only be effective on a soft tissue, normal riding surface. Whereas if let's say this is a horse that's, it's 9 years old, so maybe it is a horse that's really easy in its mind, not too hot. Let's say that the owner can therefore do a lot of walking out in the field. That will be good for a suspensory ligament, but then that will be a hard surface. So then the corrective shoeing will probably not have much effect. So you can just as well keep, for me, a normal shoeing on for that part.
Yeah.
Then this rehab of walk exercises will continue until you reach the point where the injury has healed to a satisfactory point, and also on the clinical aspect you are satisfied, horse sound, not painful at pressure and so on, and then you would progress on with a prolonged trot canter rehab, where also one aspect, especially for suspensory issues, is often in by far the cases you would see also from the initial part when you see the lameness, that the horse is most lame with the leg to the outside.
Yeah.
Then I would always, in the first, when you start trotting, I would always prefer to have it on a straight line. And when you need to start doing also short circles or no big circles, you would start turning in the direction where the horse was initially least lame.
Makes sense.
And then until you do that for a period, and then you start also to do the worst circle.
Yeah.
So that's also a part of the rehab, and actually the horse gives the answer itself from the initial. You go back to the initial exam you did, and there most horses will be more lame in one direction than the other. Of course, some injuries you have that they will be equally lame, and then it's probably equal, but in by far the majority, and especially with the suspensory ligament, they will normally be most lame with the leg to the outside.
Yeah.
So that's, and that's simply due to biomechanically loading, that you will have more loading on that outside hind leg or front leg, and therefore you will have more sinking in of the fetlock, therefore you will have more tension on the suspensory ligament, therefore more painful. And therefore, in during the rehab, you need to think in some of these biomechanical loadings so that you first avoid the where there's most more loading and more tension on it, and then gradually introduce that during the rehab.
Yeah.
And so that leads me on then, without me talking too much, leads me on then to the final aspect, because that was also one aspect we didn't talk about in the previous podcast, is that in the later stages of the rehab, there's also a lot of talking with the owner, the rider, about discipline-related rehabilitation. Now we are talking about the dressage horse. There you need to talk about, depending on the injury we are dealing with, you need to assess the different disciplined exercises that a dressage horse needs to do. Let's say this is a 9-year-old. Let's say it is already a Grand Prix horse, so it does all the exercises, and it's in a hind leg. Of course, let's say for sure the piaf, it's not the first exercise you're supposed to do, because there you do a lot of loading on the hind leg.
A lot of collection.
A lot of collection. So for sure you need to also talk with the owner, the rider, about which exercises we introduce in the earlier stages of the rehab and which one we need to wait until the very end.
Yeah.
And even when they introduce it, talk about that when you start to do some of the more demanding exercises, to just do it in small bits. So you only do, let's say, it's easy just to take one exercise. We take in the piaf. In the end of the rehab, this horse needs to get back to the piaf as well. Then it's very important that it starts doing a few steps of piaf and out.
Yeah.
I know when I say that it seems so logic, but it's just important to talk with the right about it, because I also know or remember when I was a rider that once you are in the zone and you ride,
yeah,
it can be difficult to remember,
yeah,
even if it's logic,
yeah,
and therefore the more the rider, the more you speak with the rider about it, I think the more it will be present in their mind, so the more that it will be intuitively a thought from themselves that okay, now I've done too much, walk a little
step
bit
back.
And the same goes then for if it would be a show jumper. It's important in the late part of the rehab to talk with the rider about, okay, how do we then introduce jumping again? Because it is a jumper. I mean,
needs to go back.
They cannot be transferred all into dressage horses. Nope. They are not meant to that, and they don't move that as well. So we need to get them back to jumping.
Yeah.
And they're, you need to have a talk with them about how do we do that. They can probably do maybe jumping twice a week over small jumps, just also again for the elasticity of the tendons, that they regain that, and they don't regain that if they don't do more loading. So you need to go and do some jumps, but of course for the long run of a jumper, it is important again if it is already a skilled, educated show jumper performing at high level, it does not need to do a lot of high jumps at home. That's more for the rider. So, and that's of course a talk you need to have again with the rider. Okay, it's fair, you need to do some jumps, and how you will do and train at home as well. But with this horse, if it has had a big injury in the SDFT or in the suspensory ligament, it's important that the rider knows that the fewer big jumps the horse will do, the less the risk is that it will have a reoccurrence of injury.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the aspects for the SDFT goes again for the suspensory ligament. So I don't think that you can tell me, are there any big differences in the way you would do rehab or therapeutic shoeing with the suspensory ligament horse compared to the SDFT horse?
Actually, as I said in the podcast of the SDFT, actually these two specific structures are from a corrective shoeing wise, if you go to theory, they actually delved in the same way.
Yeah.
Because you lower, you want biomechanically to lower the heels in order to have more tension on the DDFT, which is then carrying more of the weight, unloading the STFT and the suspensory ligament. So from that point, they are actually handled much in the same way. Regarding differences between these two, it is, I think, well, if there's one difference, especially if we go to the proximal suspensory ligaments, I don't think I have specific science to back me up, but it's just a for me, a logic point that is that some of the different therapeutic and rehab options that we have with laser therapy, LTS, light therapy, these kinds of treatment options, for me, it's just from a logic, from the STFT, it's very superficial. So it's more easy for these types of therapy to reach the target than with the proximal suspensory ligament. And that's also a part of the tricky part with the proximal suspensory ligament is that it's hidden a little bit because it's deep in, surrounded by the cannon bone, the two splint bones. So it is rather deep in. So, for example, our therapeutic lasers, even with the category 4 lasers, where we do actually see some very good results, it can be more tricky to reach in there. Mm-hmm. So that's one difference, at least, that I do believe more in some of these options in the STFT lesion compared to a proximal suspensory ligament.
Yeah.
Then there are, in my, there are differences. Maybe also that if I see proximal suspensory ligament desmitis, again, if you look to the conformation of the leg, there are more of these horses where I see that you, in the period of the injury and in the healing phase, that you will actually have that the fetlock is dropping a little bit more due to some that the suspensory ligament is not able to hold the fetlock in as good as way. So in a hind leg, for example, you can see some of these cases where during the period where you have the injury that if you see the leg from the side, that the fetlock is more dropped and the hock is a little bit more straight. It's not that it makes a big it does a difference regarding then the corrective shoeing, because then as you get this very dropped fetlock, then you often get a long pastern axis, and therefore the corrective shoeing changes a lot, because then you need to change your the loading pattern from the shoe and try to move that more backwards. But this is a whole topic of its own, because I find actually these horses difficult to approach corrective shoeing wise. Those horses with quite significant proximal desmitis of the hind legs, with a significant dropping of the fetlock and therefore a long pastern axis, they can be much more tricky to advise regarding the shoeing than a horse which is still having the normal toe axis and a not extra dropped fetlock.
So in these cases, would you completely leave out the corrective shoeing, or just put a normal basho on, or what would you what do you recommend?
It's different, and unfortunately, I experienced that some horses respond to some kinds of corrective shoeing and some not.
Yeah.
With some of these, actually, I try at least for a period to go even just without the shoe for two reasons. One, I hope that nature sometimes finds the best balance. And secondly, there's we know that then you take the lift off the leg. So the whole we know that during the protraction of the leg, you will have some degree of vibration of the leg.
Yeah.
And that will be decreased with decreased weight at the end of the leg. So you will decrease a little bit the vibration, which will also help for the STFT. That's also a part of why some of these corrective shoeing are done in aluminium, because then you decrease the weight. And secondly, we also know that by decreasing the weight at the extremity of the leg, you will often cause that the lifting of the leg during the protraction is maybe less pronounced. Therefore, you have less force in the landing, less impact phase in the landing, and that in general will maybe cause that you have a less deep sinking in of the fetlock, is my initial thoughts. But in some horses, this does not work. They really just get even, sink in more and more in the fetlock, and there has actually from, if we go to the theory from Jean-Marie Denoir, from the whole ISEL concept, it would be to go in and have a shoe with a widened toe, but a really beveled, rounded toe, and also actually some wide branches, which is normally contraindicated for a suspension, but here, and then you pull the shoe a lot backwards so that the center of the shoe is forced more back, so that you get more support in that plantar part of the foot, because that's kind of sinking in. Yeah. As the fetlock is dropping down, it's kind of leaving all pressure on the plantar aspect of the foot. And by moving the shoe backward and rounding it in the front and giving extra support in the branches, you try to give a little bit extra support to that heel, which is already kind of being squeezed down. So that's for some of them what I would go for. But again, here it's, I know it's boring to repeat myself, and I've said it for many of the things here, but it's very individual, and it's again very important to have a good dialogue with the farrier, and important to assess the horse some weeks after this, because if you see that actually the horse is actually getting even worse with the change of shoeing, you need to reevaluate.
Yeah.
It's a constant reevaluation, and in my mind, that's not making a mistake to put on that type of shoe and then realizing it made the horse worse. It's sometimes you need to learn
by doing it with the individual horse and make sure it keeps on track. So
yeah.
Small adjustments in all aspects.
Yeah, and I think the mistake is not to put on a shoe which then makes it a little bit worse. The mistake is not to assess it afterwards to know if it does a good or a bad effect.
Yeah.
So it's very important when you do these kind of and it's even, of course, more important if you have horses where you see we have difficulties. And I think these cases with hind suspensory desmitis and the drop fetlocks and straight hocks, they are really difficult cases. So with those, it's even more important. We talked in a previous podcast about how frequent do I see the horses, and with these, the more, if you have the, and it's easier to say when you see many, but with the cases often you get a feeling this will be a more straightforward case, and then you can be more time in between. With those cases where you feel this will be a tricky case, and I'm not quite sure if we will manage it, or how we should manage in the best way, then it's even more important to keep short intervals between checkups.
See it on a regular basis.
Yeah, to see that every time. Of course, when you see it with short intervals, you should not expect massive improvements from time to time, but you need to see small improvements from time to time and make sure that it doesn't go in the wrong direction.
Make sure that you're on track.
Yeah.
Okay, I think the take-home message for me, at least here today, is that it's very hard to generalize about these cases, and you have to take a lot of different aspects into account, both what kind of rider, what kind of economy does the rider have, and what kind of horse and what kind of surroundings do you have at your availability. So, thank you so much, Frederik. It's been very fruitful to hear about your thoughts and insights on this interesting and very often frustrating topic. Also thanks to the listeners for following us for this free podcast.
Tack för att du lyssnar på Hästveterinärerna. Om du gillar det du hör, glöm inte att trycka prenumerera i din podcast-app så att du inte missar några avsnitt. Berätta också gärna om vad du tycker genom att ge en recension. Vi tar gärna emot tips på kommande gäster och ämnen, och våra kontaktuppgifter finns i poddens beskrivning.